Welcome to Energy Matters, exploring awakening to your authentic self and finding purpose through mind, body, and soul. With your hosts, Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Energy Matters podcast, and Cody is already blushing because we have a very special episode today. Before we get into it, I just briefly want to mention you can find all of our episodes on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and if you really want to, you can go over to Cody's house in Colorado. I'll put his address in the show notes so you can listen with him. And I also want to mention that we now have our intuitive training level 1 available. If you want to do it by download, it is a 3-month program that me and Cody taught recently to get all the intuitive tools to start to really be able to learn how to see energy and meditate in a very deep way. So if you're interested in that, energymatterspodcast.com.
And if you do
all that right, program, let's get into it.
We've got a one-to-one with each of us.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Now you just offer that.
I will give you David's phone number if you do that program.
All right, fine. Since Cody said it, if you do intuitive training, you'll get a one-to-one with each of us, a 1-hour.
Yes.
All right. So we've got a very special guest today, my very good friend, Dr. Kat Meyer. Welcome, Kat.
Meow, meow, meow.
So, Dr. Kat Meyer, I just want to read your bio real quick so everyone gets a sense of who you are. She's
Oh, yes. Yeah. Please, read it to me.
This is getting hot already. Oh, my God. Okay. Read the bio, Dave. Read the bio. Actually, I was on Kat's podcast recently, and she's on ours, so this is pretty cool. Yeah. So Kat is a licensed couples therapist, a sex therapist, a yoga instructor, a published researcher. Congratulations, Kat, on that. I want to talk about that today because that happened recently. Yeah. And a Reiki practitioner. And Kat integrates various schools of thought, including neuroscience, somatic theory, psychology, EMDR, trauma therapy, and sexual health in her work for private practice, workshops, and transformational retreats. And I do want to mention you have a retreat coming up in Greece, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. And you can find all of her work at sexloveyoga.com and katmeyer.com. So welcome, Kat. Thank you so much for being here with me and Cody.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're a little nervous since you are a sex therapist. And
that's okay. I teach meditation. Everybody take a breath.
We haven't taken a breath since we hit record. I read your whole bio in one breath.
One breath. Yeah.
So, Kat, you've got so much going on, but maybe we can just start by you telling us a little bit about exactly what it is that you do, kind of the core work that you teach. I know you do couples therapy, which I definitely want to get into a bit of, and maybe talk about how men and women communicate or don't communicate.
Lack thereof.
Sure. Oh, but can you just start by telling us about, what you're up to?
Oh my God, so much.
So
like you had mentioned, I'm a sex therapist, but I go from a very holistic approach to it. So I bring in, the concepts of yoga to help us to get connected within ourselves so that we can better connect between people. What I also see is that a lot of couples struggle with, connection in their relationships, but there's no playfulness, or there's a reduction of affection going on, or there's an increase of triggers that are going on. And so bringing people back into their bodies and bringing them back into this intelligence that is innate to them, that's not so much the headspace that we get so used to, but dropping into this embodied space helps us to really change that.
And the so health couples- of all of that. So couples come to you and they're like, Dr. Kat, we're having intimacy issues or communication issues. Can you help us resolve them? And then when that happens, do you sit two people down and what is it like?
What is it like? Well, it depends on which thing that they're coming in for me. If we're doing couples therapy and they're bringing in, whether it's intimacy issues, orgasm issues, erection issues, or anything like that, it's understanding. I help them understand their concepts around sexuality, because a lot of the issues that we experience are because of the misinformation and the messages from social, from our families, from expectations of what it means to be a man or a woman, or what it means for sex or intimacy or commitment. And all of these are placing pressures on us or are creating disconnection from us. And so when we can untangle that and we can expand the definitions around sexuality or what it means to be a man or a woman or intimacy, then there's a lot of allowance that can happen. And what we'll see is that along with some of these techniques to embody and to calm the nervous system down and to actually be here, we can help to shift mm-hmm. that. And we'll see that mm-hmm. the problems dissipate or at least lessen.
So, Dr. Kat, what are some of the things that take us out of our body in a relationship, and what are some of the ways that you help people get back into their body, and what is that difference? I mean, I understand the headspace part, but is there more to it than that?
That's such a good question, because I'll tell people, I talk to people about disembodiment and not being in their body, and they're like, what are you talking about? I'm so in my body. I'm like right here. It's like, well, not quite. Yeah. Not what I'm talking about. But we, in our society, because we are so inundated with stimulation, there's so much happening at that, and we're constantly this go, 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 capitalistic, like focused on the productivity of our lives and what we can do, that we lose connection with what it feels like to be in the body, unless it's that buzzing sensation of anxiety or the buzz from energy being emanated from all these things around us. And we don't want to feel that, or it's uncomfortable. So we'll do things unconsciously to not be connected with the body. We'll distract ourselves, or we will, spend all this time worrying in our head and be up here and think that this headspace, this cognitive space is more, superior to the body intelligence. But there's actually so much here in our body that we don't understand. So if we think about our body as being in a constant conversation with our environment, whether that's an external environment or an internal one in our own minds, then our body's in this constant state of contraction and expansion. We contract to things that we're afraid of, or we contract to things that are less pleasant, and we expand towards the things that are pleasureful, or that we want, or that brings joy. So the moment that we can, and on top of that, unfortunately, some of these things are also a result of unprocessed traumas or experiences in our past. So that's why I'm saying, like, some of this is in our head that we're projecting outward. We're creating meaning out of the things in our environment because of something that we've experienced before. And that doesn't necessarily help us. It can help us in a sense, but how do we understand what is conscious and what's ruling us unconsciously, and what's something that is an actual threat? And part of that is learning to feel these contractions and expansions in the body, but also to learn to regulate the nervous system again. So if we're in a constant state of fight or flight response or freeze response, then our body is not, then it becomes a lot more difficult to understand the messages that are coming through. So calming the nervous system, whether it's through breath, whether it's through yoga poses, which helps to not only calm the nervous system down, but restructure your sympathetic response. And then also to be able to flush out any inflammation or toxins in the lymph systems that might also be causing us a disembodiment from the body, because the body's not comfortable to be there. And we don't want to be there. We don't want to feel that. So right. We'll do things to get out of it.
Me and Kat are friends here in Los Angeles, and we were talking the other day, and you were sharing a bit about your own story, because, you know, naturally, I'm sure a lot of people listening have the question of, like, how do you become a sex therapist and have a podcast on sexuality and, you know, get all this amazing experience? So maybe you can share for our listeners a little bit about how you got into this and a bit about your path and, yeah, where you come from.
Sure. Yeah. So for me, it stemmed from a history of sexual trauma from both when I was younger and then also as an adult, and then spending probably about 11 years with a very strong eating disorder. So I was very disembodied, very disconnected, lots and lots of anxiety and lots of perpetuating this pattern of both giving so much to other people, but not really tuning into what I needed or what felt good for me and that kind of thing. And then also just not able to hold relationships and really just dropping them because it would create so much anxiety and fear. And I had decided, I think it was in college that I started teaching yoga. And that was the first time that I remember being in Shavasana, which is the final resting pose, and just realizing, holy crap, this is what it feels like to be in my body. Like, it felt good. And I didn't have that buzzing, like, this kind of thing. And so that was the beginning of my journey there. And then moving forward, going into psychology, I got my doctorate in marriage and family therapy specifically because I wanted to understand relationships and I wanted to understand how people connected, because I didn't understand that. I would watch people connect and have intimacy and depth and like hugs and stuff like that. And I'd be like, I don't know how to do that, which sounds bizarre, right? Because we take this for granted. We see this every day, but for some of us, it's not. We're operating on an old program that says that's dangerous. And so then going into specializing in sexual health and then combining all of those together, I think Reiki energy work was another drastic step forward in the reclamation of my body and understanding myself as a sexual being.
So like when you went through that trauma, it disconnected you from your body in a very like real sense.
Yeah. And I point out to the trauma brain, which is interesting. Anytime we go through trauma, the brain, it's like it short circuits and all the data from the experience get put into the brain in pieces. So the brain wants to be able to process through these things, but because of that short circuiting, the brain, it's like a disjointedness. It's like and the operating system doesn't work as effectively or efficiently. So then as a result, the brain wants to make sense of this thing so it doesn't happen again. And it usually blames ourselves. So it puts it on ourselves and creates a cognition about who we are, because we have more control, quote unquote, over ourselves than we do the external environment. So a lot of times we will create a cognition of I'm not enough, or I'm dangerous, or I'm in danger, or I'm bad. And moving forward, we will begin to look at other experiences through the lens of that. And so not only did that disconnect me from my body, because now my body remembered what that felt like, the trauma, and it didn't want to feel that. So there's this what's called dissociation, which is the brain disconnecting you from the emotional experience or the bodily experience, can take you outside so that you can survive in that moment. Because it's too much energy trying to make sense of it emotionally and physically and mentally and all.
Yeah, right. So you kind of remove yourself from it or compartmentalize it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
As you separate.
Right.
So as you talk about that, one thing that makes me think about is the amount of shame that can be around sex. Is that related? I guess it's not just related to trauma, but that's something that comes up a lot in working through someone's issues around sexuality.
Oh my God. Yes, for sure. Shame all around. And I would look at the definition of trauma, because a lot of us assume that trauma is something that is major, you know, whether it's somebody coming back from the war, right? Or somebody being attacked. But a trauma is again, it's this concept of the brain short-circuiting or the body contracting to something to where it doesn't process through completely. So we can look at big traumas and we can look at smaller traumas that might be something like somebody says something to us and then our body contracts, our brain short-circuits and says, oh, I'm bad or I'm not wanted. Yeah. Right. So all of us have at least little traumas throughout our lives from these messages that we receive from our parents. Maybe we were caught masturbating and our parents said, oh my God, you're dirty. Don't do that. You know, and then our body contracts and our eyes go wide and we're like, oh my God, I did something wrong. And that gets input into the brain of don't do that. Don't touch that. Your body's dirty, you know, and all kinds of messages that we have around that. And a lot of these, we are, you know, we're unconscious to the types of programming that we are, put in front of. These messages in society around what sex is supposed to look like, in society of what is good sex, or we're supposed to orgasm every time, or sex is just penetration, or masturbation is dirty, or religious concepts around sex before marriage is bad, or even the medical model, which tends to be and has tended to be more of a male-based concept of sexuality. But now we're getting a lot more information out there around the female sexuality and understanding those are two different things. And yet we tried to apply the same. Why now?
What are those two different things?
And even that is complex and we're still learning because we have the same genital tissues in both genders, but then we also have a plethora of different types of gender identities. And then we also have how things work similarly, or we have the same types of hormones in our bodies, but are different amounts across individuals and how that impacts their sexuality. So, oh my God, there's just so much.
So Kat, maybe we could just pull on that thread a little further. So somebody's
which one?
Listening. So the one about sex. So somebody,
yeah. I like that thread. Let's see what else goes.
You want a man to pay attention, just say the word. we've never had so many male listeners. Oh, Cody, you see that spike in the chart on that episode?
Yeah,
they listen the whole way through, and they all click through to Kat via. So Kat, just the thread of shame and sexuality, and in even body image. So, because I've seen this a lot as well with clients that I work with. So, if somebody does have body image issues or shame around their sexuality, is there a tip or a technique or something you would guide them through to be able to look at that and then work through the energy of it to be able to come out the other side to have a healthy, sober idea and feeling around their sexuality?
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, body image, unfortunately, is so ingrained in us because of society and all the images that we get. And this is across men and women and every gender identified, because we are inundated with these images, these photoshopped images of what a body is supposed to look like, or what a hot body or an attracted or desired body is supposed to look like. And even though we cognitively know that those are not real, we still imprint in our mind that that's what we're supposed to look like, because we see how other people drool over those pictures, and we see how that elicits a response, a desired response. So part of that is bringing people into teaching them about self-compassion. I would never tell somebody, don't have negative thoughts about your own body. Don't tell yourself that, you know, all these things, but because it's about accepting that part of you that comes up. So if we keep rejecting that part of us that we don't like, then we're just going to perpetuate this loop of dissatisfaction with ourselves and shame about ourselves. And shame is the feeling that there's something wrong with who we are as a being. So self-compassion, if we start looking at that, we can break it down into three different parts. The first one is self-kindness. So when we notice that we are being self-critical, not if, because a lot of us, even those of us who are, you know, evolved and and been working on this shit for a while, we still have moments where we're less than kind to ourselves. It's again, acknowledging it and being kind. Okay, I am being really hard on myself, and just acknowledging that. I'm having a really hard time with being nice to myself. The second one would be, and it's also validation. So validating yourself, given everything that I've experienced in my life and seen in my life, it makes sense why I would be hard on myself. It's here I am trying to regain control. The second one is understanding that this is a collective experience. So remembering that you are not the only one going through this negative cycle of thinking, but it's a collective human experience. Many of us are hard on ourselves. And when we do that, we reduce the feeling of separation and aloneness, and we reconnect with the rest of the world. And then the third one is mindfulness, you know, watching this non-judgmental aspect and to be able to separate yourself and be that witness. You know, okay, here's what I'm doing. Ah, I'm berating myself again. Oh, I'm looking in the mirror and I'm being less than kind. Oh, I'm, you know, and it's just watching those things. Can we disconnect from it and acknowledge it as thinking or words versus the identity of it? I am these words. I am this thing. So it's working with ourselves instead of rejecting ourselves. Yeah. And then I also bring people into, I do a monthly women's sensual yoga experience that we do yoga in our underwear. And it is meant to press the edges of our discomfort, but also in a safe container with other women. So yes, we have these thoughts that come up because we're looking around at other women and we're like, oh my God, her body's so hot and mine's not. And it's catching that thought in the moment and it's shifting to self-compassion. And it's that practice that we, along with calming the nervous system, regulating our nervous system, that we begin to shift that in our brain. And we change the neurocircuitry of that, but only because we keep practicing it. And not because it's an overnight thing.
God, how many people out there do you think have trouble with orgasming because of one form of body image or shame? Is that something that stops that from happening?
Oh my God, huge. And again, I'll emphasize for men and for women. And I can speak for myself in this journey because I had struggled with orgasms and I didn't realize how tight my body, how contracted my body was. So if we think about, we've got multiple things that are at play here. First, there's the disconnection because we're in our head. So if we're engaging sexually, and I mean, and even outside of the bedroom, because sexuality is more of like this way of being in the world and not just the act of sex, but this presence that we hold and the way that we navigate and interact with our environment. But if we are held contracted and rigid in the body, then there's not that fluidity of energy. And then also we look at the if we think about genital orgasms, the pelvic floor, a lot of us, like if all of our listeners stop and drop down into their bodies for a moment and into their pelvic floor, they may find that there's this tension going on or there's this squeezing or pulling up on the pelvic floor. And we do this so often because we're anxious or we're tense or we're running about trying to produce things, including body image, right? That orgasm is a contraction. So if we're already contracted here, if we're already tense, think about how that impacts our ability to have the contraction necessary for an orgasm. So until we can be able to actively and consciously relax our pelvic floor or relax the body to be able to open to that. Another piece is that our sensory receptors close when we're contracted, when we're tense. So if we are in our head, if we're worrying about our body image, the body's contracted, we're less sensitive. So all of these pieces are at play, impacting our orgasm. And then some.
But just follow-up orgasm question. I have seven follow-up orgasm questions. I have them written out here. Hold on. For real though, one of them is everyone able to orgasm? So, if there are people out there who never have, or yeah, maybe never have, is like everyone capable?
So yes and no, right? I would say yes, because there are layers and layers and layers of all kinds of things that can be impacting our ability to orgasm, men and women. Now, there are also cases that I have read that in which there's a biological impact on there. So whether there was a circumcision trauma, or whether there is something related to biological functioning that might be impacting it, hormones or circulation of the blood, or high cholesterol, or those kinds of things that would impact that on the physiological level, can be, I've read cases in which that's they are what we call inorgasmic. However, I also think that it's, even those are things that we can look at. So for the most part, right? There's lifestyle mm-hmm. issues. There's things that we eat. There's things that we, moving into the body. So I very much avoid black and white answers. I'm very much more of a, there's a potential of anything, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is how willing are you to identify yourself as a sexual being or as an orgasmic being, and be willing to let go of some of these other identities. Now, I will also say on the yes piece of yes, everybody's orgasmic, because we can be orgasmic in any part of our body and not just genital.
I was going to ask about that. Mm-hmm. That's one of my six.
The brain thing or,
Every single part of your body can be orgasmic.
Cody, you can orgasm in your pinky finger.
You're good. You're good. If you decided to identify yourself as an orgasmic person, you very much could. But because our society has decided that orgasms are only genital, we have constructed this barrier in our own minds that this is what this is, and I can't achieve orgasm anywhere else. But what we have found is people who are paraplegics can have orgasm in other parts of their body, or they can orgasm even, oh my God, it's so fascinating. There's four different nerves that are connected even down into your pelvic region, and connecting with any one of those can create an orgasm and a different sensation of an orgasm as well. So for women, there's the cervix and there's the clitoral and there's this A spot and G spot and all these kinds of things. And for men, the P spot, there's...
The whole alphabet's up there.
Which is also kind of funny, because we can also take away the alphabets and just say, oh yeah, like any part of my body can be orgasmic.
So I literally do have follow-up questions. Sorry, Cody, hold on. I have a couple big ones. One, what exactly is an orgasm? Like, what is it? What is the mechanism in the body? Like, yeah, what, God, what?
And that question is actually still in debate and research today.
Really?
Because there is, like I was saying, there's many different experiences of orgasm. And so often, this is an interesting thing. I get people into my office who say that they've never experienced an orgasm, but the more that we explore around it, they have experienced an orgasm, but they were assuming it was going to be what we see in movies, but theirs turned out to be just a gentle release of pressure and not this, ecstasy, cosmic union, divine, I see God kind of thing.
Yeah. So orgasm it sounds like exists along a continuum, both in the sensation and in the full experience. Like, you have a full body orgasm. It's not just a phrase that people say. There's a real thing like that.
Yeah, and even beyond that. So some orgasms are, like I was saying, for the genital, there may be a release that happens, or there may be this euphoric sensation that washes over the body, or it may be this like feeling of contractions that happen, or it can be this energetic experience that moves through the body. Tantric practitioners, including myself, there's, you know, this feeling of the energy rolling through the body and moving up into the spine. So some people will experience spine undulations or this buzzing sensation that rolls up the body or up into the head. There are experiences of feeling high. Orgasms can last a couple of seconds. Orgasms can last hours. It really varies. So to give a definition is super difficult. And I think limiting.
I just want to follow up with that because in my younger years, I did some tantric work and some retreats, and one of my teachers would teach us how to draw energy up and down the spine. Take an orgasm that would normally be localized and kind of bring it up into the brain and have it throughout the entire body. And I remember learning that it's not easy. It's like the practice that I learned was like long breathing techniques for 20 plus minutes at a time, being very open with communication with your partner. I mean, you could also do it on your own. And just having those experiences and realizing, oh my God, there's so much more to this than we're taught growing up. Like, there's a whole nother level to this. And so there's this, like, you know, the body orgasm, the localized orgasm, the full body orgasm. And then there's almost like this spiritual orgasm, I guess I would call it, that can happen, right? Mm-hmm. So on that latter end of that spectrum, have you experienced that? And is there, do you teach people how to get to a place like that? What does it look like?
Describe it to us. You do it. Yeah. Give a demonstration. So, like I was describing, how do I want to describe this? So, yes, I have. I've been studying Tantra since I was about 22. And even my practice evolved over time because, like I said, I was very contracted and fearful. So for me, it was undoing a lot of the programming. It was deep programming first. And Tantra, or I'll use the word sacred sexuality because that moves even beyond Neo-Tantra, because it can also be a sacred kink practice or BDSM practice that is very sacred and intentional. So some of these concepts of, you know, embodiment. Well, let me start with all of the things that can help remove the blocks in your body that are preventing the flow of energy so that we can create a more clear and spacious channel for that energy to move through the body. So these are things like, again, deprogramming, removing the messages that cause a contraction in the body, including shame. That's things like embodiment. So getting into the body and moving and opening into the body, like yoga or breath work, or in Tantra, we do a series of, well, both of those, but there can also be chanting and sounds, vocalization, which can open the airways, but also stimulate the vagus nerve, which is also connected down into, for women, the cervix and then the genitals as well. There's also, connecting with your other partner. So learning to connect between and syncing up and into the movement of one another. There's also intention, the concept of intention. If we create a clear focus of something that we're trying to attain, or not trying to, but we are attaining, we're moving to attain, then we create a clear focus channel on where that energy is moving. I do teach people this kind of, these kind of practices. However, I usually, the types of clients that I see, both in my retreats and in my office, usually need more of the deprogramming. So, so even just removing those barriers, they don't necessarily care for the cosmic stratosphere type of sex. They're looking for more good enough sex and reconnection and feeling good. So for people who do want to go into more of the cosmic experience, the intimacy retreat I'm doing in May will incorporate some of those pieces as well. I led a retreat last year called Discovering Intimacy, and that was like, we also included basic tantric 101 practices. That was just getting people to feel into that buzzing sensation, because a lot of people are like, well, that's energy. Like, what is this thing? You know,
was I there for that one?
You were. Yeah. Were you in that workshop? I don't know.
You know, I probably wasn't paying very good attention. That's why we're here now.
Taking notes now. I hope,
you were,
David,
at that retreat, though.
Yeah, because Cody, me and you taught the retreat the week after.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in Costa Rica.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, in Costa Rica. Yeah. In Costa Rica,
yeah. Yeah.
So,
before we, I have a question, but before we move on, I want to let our listeners know that David and I had a little competition between who could say the word orgasm the most, and David is winning.
But now you just said we have a competition, so you can say the word orgasm, so you can say more time.
So I could, one more time. I do have a question off the topic of orgasm, unless David has some more follow-up.
Yeah, don't change the topic. We haven't climaxed yet with this topic.
Oh, this was just the foreplay. Okay.
Yes, yeah, just one last one for Kat. Kat, maybe just a little technique for people, whether they're on their own or with a partner, when it comes to some of that tantric work of raising the energy up into the body and taking their orgasms to the next level. Is there a book, or is there a technique or a suggestion you can make for people who are listening to this? Like, I want a piece of that. Where do I start?
Yeah. One of my favorite books that I recommend people, that's super accessible, especially towards the modern person, is Urban Tantra. So I really like that one. The way she breaks it down is very accessible. And I would say the very first basics for people is eye gazing and synchronized breath. Just having those two things can just expand your pleasure potential and this orgasmic energetic potential tenfold. So a lot of us close our eyes because we're trying to stay internal in that sensation of whatever the good feeling is that going on. But the moment that you connect your eyes with somebody else in that super vulnerable moment, it's very vulnerable and scary, but
I just started sweating.
I know. I'm like trying to use my own words, but I'm turning myself on. I'm like, Yeah, and then matching your breath too, because not only are you connecting with your own body, but you're connecting with your partner's body, and you're opening into the body, and you're relaxing the body, and all of those things are incredible.
That was my last follow-up. Go ahead, Cody. Thanks, Kat. Thank you. That was awesome.
I'll let you cool down.
I hate to change the topic. I mean, I'm fine if you want to talk more about...
That's great technique, by the way. Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm done. Here, guys. It's really good talking.
He's climaxed.
Yeah, I'm out of here. I need to
gotta leave for a little while. He's got some things to practice.
What happened to the Energy Matters podcast?
Oh,
2019 got edgy.
True. We have not been this edgy before.
That's right.
I had a question, and it doesn't actually have necessarily to do with orgasm, but it has to do just with the state of sex in, I don't know if it's the world or just this country, but the Atlantic ran a big article about the sex recession, it called it a month or two ago. And I just wondered your take on that, and is there a repression going on now that, I don't know. I don't know what's happening, but I'm curious about that.
A sexual repression?
No, recession.
Oh, recession. Interesting. Yeah. What do they mean by that? I definitely.
They mean that millennials and this, and maybe whatever that kind of core age group is having less sex than generations prior.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I had heard that. And I think, gosh, it's so difficult to hear statistics and that kind of stuff because we don't know who's funding it and we don't know where, you know, what the sample looks like as a researcher. that's right. Something that I always look at. But then also I would say this, I mean, we're definitely seeing trends in the younger generation as changing in many different ways. A lot of them are becoming, people will say less intentional because they're like, oh, they're on their social medias all the time, or they're texting right. all the time. So that impacts their ability to connect with one another, possibly, or it's also evolving. So we can positively reframe that as evolving into just a different way of interacting, because we can also suggest that connection has increased drastically. It's just in a different form. So we are seeing as a trend as the millennials are identifying as non-identifying. So we're seeing more queer, or we're seeing them say, hey, I don't want to identify. Then versus a lot of us where we're like, are you heterosexual? Are you gay? Are you pansexual? Are you, you know, what are you? Because we want to know how to interact with somebody. But I would also say that there's more and more information, accurate information around sexuality that's coming out than there used to be. So there may be people, maybe the generation is becoming more conscious and intentional around their actions. So they're not just having, I don't know, because we're also the hookup culture. So I'd be really curious to read this article because we're also engaging more sexually because we're reclaiming our sexuality. And we are realizing that some of these old messages of being a slut or being, you know, promiscuous is not, is only creating more shame and isn't necessary for us to be holding. So, you know, I can see a little bit of everything going on. Now we can look at cultures like Japan, where there's definitely a sexual recession because we're even seeing that in the population decrease. The birth rate has gone down because they're not having sex. They're having things that substitute the sex or cuddle party or hire a cuddle person or, you know, hire a boyfriend or those kinds of things that avoid the intimacy or the commitment
of a full-on relationship and sex. Yeah. Oh, interesting. I'm curious about your thought then. You mentioned identity and people not identifying. I'm curious about your thoughts, you know, what you perceive that to be, like what's happening. Are we just trying to get free of some repressive stereotypes and roles and break free of that? Are people becoming aware of themselves beyond a certain cultural or kind of set picture about who they have to be and the limits of that? I'm curious on your thoughts.
Yeah, and I'm curious too, because the younger generation, because that's during the stage of our development where we are exploring who we are as humans and who we want to identify as, right? So there's this part of, part of this may be coming from this refusal to wear a label, and a label as boxing us into some sort of a preconceived notion of what we're supposed to look like or how we're supposed to act. And we're saying, you know, F this, I'm going to act however I want to and be whoever I want to. So there may be an element of freedom in that. But then at the same time, as humans, we love labels because we love to be able to categorize and we love to be able to know, how am I supposed to interact with this person? And how do I want the world to interact with me? Right. So if I identify as vegan, everybody knows then that I don't eat animal products. And so, you know how to interact with me, you know how to interact with me as a vegan, if I identify as that, right?
Right.
But then we also have, where for the, you know, maybe identify as plant-based. So that doesn't, so I don't want to be identified as, you know, whatever the preconceived idea of what a vegan is to be. But I want you to interact with me as I eat things that are plants, you know, versus giving me a steak. I think the same thing with sexuality. But what we're realizing is sexuality is less of a one or the other. It's a spectrum of things. So we look at this spectrum of sexuality of between heteronormative, heterosexual to same-sex, gay, or whatever, in between and beyond. And so for me personally, people ask what my orientation is, and I will say I do identify and I use sexually fluid. That way, and even that label denounces labels. You know, so there's more permission in allowing that to be whatever it is. It allows it to change in the moment, across moments, and people are like, well, how do I interact with you? Right?
My comedic brain is just, I'm gonna, holding it all in right now. Can't even.
There's many connections.
I identify as food fluid on the vegan.
That's right. I'm not even gonna. I'm gonna have a whole episode on what I just wanted to say, but.
Part two.
With the time we have left, Kat, I also wanted to ask couples, and in particular, the communication between men and women historically has been difficult. And the butt of most stand-up comedian jokes is that interaction between men and women and how we don't listen or hear each other or understand each other very well. And since you're a couples therapist, can you finally solve the issue for us and tell us how men and women can communicate more clearly? Why they don't?
Oh my God, yes, I'm going to give you all of it right now. Cool. And I'm going to start speaking really fast.
Awesome.
So I think I would first go beyond just man and woman and say human. So we as humans struggle with communication for many, many reasons. Part of it is because given everything that I've experienced in my life, I have created a reality in my head from which I see and make sense of everything around me. That is going to be different than everyone else externally to me because they have different life experiences that have formulated their realities and how they make sense of everything. So we oftentimes project that the other person has the same reality as we do and that our reality is the truth with a capital T, and we can't hold that there are multiple realities that can coexist and also all be real and true. So we run into that piece. We also run into these mechanisms that we have developed to protect ourselves from other people. So in order for me to, when I get activated or when I get triggered, I'm going to do one of these activating behaviors, whether it's go silent or whether it's lash out or whether it's manipulate or call the person a million times. To somebody else, that appears crazy, but to me, it makes sense because it's a survival skill that I have gained to understand, to get my needs met. And that can be, it works, but it doesn't work, right? It works because it gets the person to connect with you. All of a sudden, they're yelling back. They're very, very much seeing you. They're very much connecting with you and talking with you, but it's not conducive for a healthy, effective relationship. So some of this is just realizing the patterns that we fall into, the activating behaviors that we do. It's learning new skills to be able to communicate effectively. Embodied communication. So can we learn what our body intelligence is saying and own our own process, whether it's through the body communication or owning our experience. So sometimes I will say and teach my clients, you know, I don't have the words to say what's going on, but I know that my stomach is clenched. So if I call attention to that, oof, that made my stomach just clench. I don't really know what that means yet, but can you stay here with me? And as I figure this out or process this with me, there's an invitation. There's also a vulnerability and an ownership. So, and I think a lot of us struggle with vulnerability as well. We struggle with anybody seeing us as less than sparkly or less than evolved. And that creates an armor and it creates this distance and an inability, or it's the antithesis to intimacy. So if we think of intimacy as into me, you see, if we start showing the people who we are amid all of our processes and all of our shadows and all the things that were, that are socially non-desirable, then we can get somewhere. Mm. Like humanness attracts humanness. So if we keep showing up as human, we're going to bring the same.
So whether you're sexually fluid or super rigid, Cody, whatever you are, it's about being human. I get
being
it.
Being human.
And open. Thank you, Kat. Thank you for that. God, I mean, we should extend this by another hour because we're just getting started.
Just warming up.
I do. Yeah, there are some more questions about that. Just that relationship, especially long-term relationship.
Oh, maybe you should have me back to talk about relationships then.
Yeah, we'll do a whole episode on it, Kat. Kat, if people do want to find out more about the work that you do, where's the best place for them to find you?
So sexliveyoga.com. They can also check out my podcast, Eat, Play, Sex, on iTunes, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Or they can go to my Instagram, Sex Love Yoga, where every single day I write a post about relationships, sexuality, and embodiment.
Amazing. And we'll have those links in our notes on iTunes, on YouTube. And Kat, tell us about the retreat.
So in May, May 5th through the 11th, I am co-leading an intimacy retreat with Andrew Seeley, who is an acro yoga expert. And we will be guiding everybody through some of these exact practices that I've been talking about today. So how can we expand our pleasure potential, our ability to be intimate, the depth of our connection with ourselves so that we can better do that with others? This is for couples, this is for singles, everybody involved. And we're going to Mykonos, Greece for that.
Let's go, Cody. I think we need a couples retreat, Cody. I think we should go. We'll do a live show from there. That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome.
And Kat, and I also want to plug that you've got some online courses coming out. They're not out quite yet, but yeah. Me and Kat like to talk about we like to nerd out on our online courses. Oh, how far along is your course? Oh my God. Websites. But look out for Kat's courses as well. So Dr. Kat Meyer, thank you so, so much for being here with us today and sharing your wisdom and making me and Cody blush and think deeply about some really important topics that I think we avoid.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Intimacy, Cody. Into me, you see. Look into me, buddy.
Right. I got thank that.
You. Yeah. So, well, okay. Dr. Kammeyer, thank you. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening to the Energy Matters podcast. As always, find us on YouTube, iTunes, energymatterspodcast.com. Enjoy yourselves, meditate, and find some good intimacy. Amen to that. See you all next time.
Amen to that. Thank you, Dr. Kat.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
You've been listening to the Energy Matters podcast with Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or soundcloud.com.